Now I'll be passing it to Rabia and Megan for the fireside chat.
Thank you, Yıldız. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Next Generation Circuit Designer Workshop again, and also to our fireside chat with Megan Smith. And thank you for joining us on a Sunday. But I promise you that we will spark an interesting and inspiring conversation with Megan. I'm Rabia Yazıcıgil from Boston University, and I'm excited to moderate the session. Our event will kick off with a short discussion, followed by questions from the audience. You're invited to type your questions in the Q&A chat throughout the event, and I will ask them to our speaker on your behalf. Today, we have a very distinguished speaker with us, Megan Smith. In September 2014, President Obama named Megan the United States Chief Technology Officer in the Office of Science and Technology Policy. In this role, she served as an assistant to the president. As the US CTO, Megan focused on how technology policy, data, and innovation can advance the future of our nation. Megan is an award-winning entrepreneur and engineer. She holds a bachelor's and master's degrees in mechanical engineering from MIT, where she completed her master's thesis work at the MIT Media Lab. Megan previously served as CEO of Planet Art and as a vice president of Google. She co-created the company's Sol4X Innovation Community Project, as well as Women Tech Makers Tech Diversity Initiative, worked on a range of other projects as well. She is currently the CEO and founder of Shift 7. Without further ado, I'll keep my introduction very brief and actually let Megan tell us about her career path and share her experiences.
Thanks, Rabia. Hi. Hi, everybody. It's great to be with you. And thank you for people who are late and people who are early. It's it's interesting because you had the photo there of me when I was younger. I was holding some hardware. You guys are fellow I'm a mechanical engineer, so not circuit design, but I have deep appreciation, and I actually quickly pulled up a picture for fun of some of that work. Let me pull it up really quick. But it's interesting to think about mentors and teamwork. This is some of our early work on the beginnings of smartphones. These are prototypes. You can kind of see they just broke open an old case. Nice. And it was tethered, you know, because we couldn't actually be this small. We could be, you know, bigger. But it was 1992, and the thing that I guess I share is these people. So Joanna Hoffman in purple is really Steve Jobs' sparring partner. And a lot of times we just see, you know, this picture of Steve, but it's really all of them together who made the Macintosh. And you can see in the pyramid picture, see there, there's a baby. A lot of people don't know that Steve Jobs, Joanna said that Steve used to make that guy go home early because he's everyone else was a bit younger and didn't have children. He's like, you have to go eat dinner with your kids. You know, so people, we don't hear these stories of like, it's like that people are like us, you know? And That's the other one I would share is down here in the corner, where is she? Do you see Susan Kerr in the very corner? She's also in the pyramid. Susan is the graphic design person for the Mac. They called her Dr. Kerr because she had her PhD, and she was friends with Andy Hertzfeld. And the reason I bring them up is because when we hear about the Mac or Apple, you know, we hear of Steve and Steve, who are amazing, but you don't really, you know, it takes a whole team.
That's true. And
it's all together. And a lot of people don't know that the original Mac team was so gender balanced. You know, like, you know, whatever, look at the pyramid, right? And Joanna, I was interviewing her, and we were talking about the machine, sort of the Mac on the inside of the original case has all these signatures. There's tons of women, like Debbie Coleman. Joanna points out was an English major who taught herself all kinds of things, became the head of manufacturing, ran all the ops. You know, all the signatures in the Mac are much more gender balanced. And so in a lot of ways, one of our challenges is the story's not told right.
That was actually my first question to you.
Yeah.
You started by yourself, but I was about to ask about the so many women, and they're all untold heroes. So, for example, I was looking at Ellen Swallow, who introduced the term ecology, and she's actually the reason that we have clean water, breathable air, and the science of food we eat every day. They're all thanks to her, but none of us actually know about it, including myself, until recently. So how do you propose we increase the visibility of this technical woman and minorities in engineering?
Yeah, see, even look here, you know, this picture of them with their, you know, the terrible outfits, everybody has very uncomfortable things we used to have to wear. you know, you're talking about Allen. She was the first woman to be admitted to MIT in kind of the 1800s. And I like to like notice these, in, we're always talking about the industrial age, right? So we're in the fourth industrial age, the age of AI, right? So whatever. So we can think of the second industrial age, which was her time, which is this time when a lot of things were going on. And Ellen was could see all the pollution. And she's like us, a technical woman who was noticing that, hey, maybe we could like measure the quality of this water. We could start to do things. So it leads to sewage treatment, you know, water treatment, food. So by the time there was a big World's Fair in Chicago around 1892, it's called the World Columbia Exhibition. And this huge World's Fair festival. And so there was, of course, one woman's building. Like we could have one, it was like the movie Smurfs. We could have one woman. And so she was a big part of the test kitchens and other things there. And in some ways people dismiss these things, right? That, you know, that's women's work or craft, you know, those are makers, you know, making all these beautiful things. And so the diminishing. So just have to take confidence from these things. Have to get confidence that we have always been at the table the whole time, even if we can't get our paper published in our own name. I mean, even J.K. Rowling used initials, right? She has that's no true. Middle name. She just put K because it's her grandma's name. So she thought, you know, the publishers all said, no one's going to read this book by a woman. I guess Harry Potter wasn't read by anyone. So like, it's ridiculous. So I'm getting to kind of the ridiculousness of the situation we're in, and yet it's suffering. Because I'll give you my own personal experience. So we get to work on all these amazing early smartphones at General Magic. And we were like young, you know, I was just out of school. I had gone to Tokyo to work for Apple in Japan. So I was excited to hear someone from Apple. And I met these folks. I met Bill Atkinson, who was part of the General Magic team, and came back to Silicon Valley. And that's how I started there. And I got to work with a guy named Wendell Sanders. Talk about chip design. Like he was the original chip. He was in Fairchild, and then he came into and was an original teammate with Steve Wozniak on chips at Apple. And his son Brian went on, who was one young with us, went on to work on the iPod and others with Tony, who was in the General Magic team. You know, so what I'm getting at with that, it's kind of an apprentice journey mastery experience we all have to come into this field, and everyone is qualified. Anyone's qualified, and it's a question of trying to learn as we go. I really love listening to people's points in the video because, you know, you bring your passion. Katherine Johnson, I was able to recommend her for the Medal of Freedom. Wonderfully, President Obama chose her, and we know her from Hidden Figures. She always says, share your passion. And so we have to share our passion for chips, you know, and this kind of design, not just, you know, using a phone, but like what's inside it and how can we make it useful for all the problems in the world, especially the ones that are of interest to you, not necessarily someone telling you what to do all the time. And how do we have mentors like I got with the Macintosh team? And the last thing I'll say on that particular thing, I was really sad when the movies came, you know, the movie Jobs, all these movies, not because it wasn't cool and interesting, but the women were missing, literally missing. Like Joanna is in the movie Jobs. It opens, I don't know if you've seen this film, but I think it's an Aaron Sorkin film. And this Steve character is looking at the screen with Andy and Joanna. And Joanna is asking questions as if she doesn't know things. And I'm thinking, Joanna is a physics grad from MIT who is super intense and like spars with Steve and they get into it. This is not accurate. And then at one point, there's a line written in the movie. They're all standing there and the Steve character is giving Andy a hard time because the demo's not working, right? Like demos don't work. And he says, Andy, I'm gonna tell him so-and-so did this and so-and-so did that and so-and-so did this and so-and-so, and Susan made the bag. And I thought, did he just say, did the fake character of Steve just say a line, Susan made the bag? He means Susan Kare. He means the woman who invented all of modern user interface, drew the first icons, the first emojis, the first drawings, all WYSIWYG, what you see is what you get. All of the graphics that now, you know, are what we look, this is Susan's art and gajillions, you know, I don't know how many cell phones there are now of people and computers use all of her work, but she did, maybe she made the bag, but I think she made how we interact with the computer. visually, right? And Steve was very gender balanced in that. And so let's show him as a role model. And let's show all the role models. So I guess the reason why I'm talking sort of long about this is because it's really important for us, because I think without this, two things happen. One is it reduces our confidence that we belong when we've belonged the whole time at the highest levels in the teams. And the second is it also teaches boys, you know, from an early age to not include the girls. And that's unfair to them too. So it's something to really pay attention to.
Thank you. Thank you sharing for all of these great stories and advice. So I guess you talked about how do we encourage these diverse representations. How do you do that in your company, in your current workplace at Shift 7? What do you do to encourage diverse representations?
We do a lot of different things. Some of it is storytelling, and we're, you know, a small team. And so we, you know, we don't have massive traffic. We're just a team doing our thing. So we'll partner. So this is, I'll put it in the chat, something called 20 for 2020. And so we partnered with Amy Poehler Smart Girls, who has, you know, millions of users, and the Female Quotient, who's a group of many different women, but corporate women, especially coming together in community like you are. Many of them are heading marketing and other parts of the business side, but also technical people too. So in this particular case, this was a really interesting experience. It was actually supported by Ford Foundation, and we just said for 2020, let's highlight for the first 20 days, one a day, a longer, you know, medium piece about an extraordinary accomplishment by women, you know, each woman or team. And it was really something to do it because we found so many mistakes in Wikipedia and everywhere. And the mistakes come in two forms. One is just either the person's missing, you know, that's called the wiki gap. I think it's 80% of the profiles in Wikipedia are written are about men, and 20% of the profiles about humans are about women. So we have to balance that. And then you see also things missing, they're shorter. And the third one I've found is a language. I've found that often there's much more, you know, just missing language. Or if there's a summary one, like let's take Mary Shelley. Mary Shelley, of course, in the first industrial age, writes Frankenstein. You know, she's, I think, 18 when she thinks of this story. And there's two really important things I'd add to your knowledge about her. One is to think of Frankenstein more as AI warning, like should we raise the monster or not? It's a huge question as we become into this industrial age or mechanization, right? For now, us, automation. You know, and today someone like Joy Buwa-Lamwini, the Algorithmic Justice League team looking at face recognition, would say, you know, I just talked to her, we talk about machine unlearning. You know, there's a lot of bad data to crawl that's wrong, racist, sexist, ageist, etc. And so Mary Shelley's mother is Mary Wollstonecraft. And most of us have never read The Vindication of the Rights of Women. We also don't know that the Galvanis were a couple who were both working on all of this, you know, all of this electric, you know, in the beginning of Understand Electricity. We don't know, we don't see, but if you look at the old paintings, she has the equipment in her hands. So they are working together. But if you go to the story of Galvani, she's not listed. So I added her, you know, we could edit Wikipedia. And you find that you can't add new material, you have to find proof of and link to it, which you do. So for all of us, I think, we have to see the truth and the connections. And so we do a lot of work to try to lift stories and team up and encourage others to do that. I'm going to put a wonderful story of the women who did the whooping cough vaccine. And some guy said to them, you can work on it if, you know, if it amuses you. And they worked on their, yeah, really. So people are dismissive. And they went around and collected cough plates. Imagine collecting COVID cough plates. Wow. And with like 3K or something, they started two amazing people. First started, I think it's Grace and Pearl, and then Lonnie, who's an amazing chemist, joined them. And you know how we get shots, vaccinations, the DTaP? So they actually created what was DTP that became DTaP. So instead of having 18 shots, children get 6. Right. Oh, so thank you. And there's a statue of them. So I just, everywhere you turn, you can find it, but you have to
find those stories.
And that's something we're always up to and in team with.
Thank you. Thank you actually sharing all these stories. I already learned a lot. So let me ask something else. We talk a lot about getting women into STEM or encouraging them to be part of the STEM, but what about keeping them? What advice would you give them to stay in the field, even if they feel discouraged or because of all of these things we already discussed? Mm-hmm. What would be your advice for them to stay?
I think it's hard because there's so much bias in the world. And so one of the number one things to do, I think, is what you guys are doing, which is be in community. Gloria Steinem always says this. She's like, gather often. And she's one of the major women's leaders, you know, from 70s on. And if we are with each other, we can help build each other's confidence and bring community. And we can notice patterns. A lot of times discrimination comes in very specific forms to you, but it's really not about you. It's about systemic, bias. Some of it is getting talked over in a meeting, or a couple minutes later, somebody says something. The White House women, they started with President Obama. I wasn't there yet, but they started doing things like, a few minutes later, they say, well, what Robbie said just a few minutes ago, I really agree. So they're lifting each other up and repeating what each other are saying in order to be heard. And part of it, actually, I would share some data on that, because I think some of it is not even the guy's meaning to do it, but this is movies. So when we watch movies, this is down here, this one is children's television. It's a little thing, but this is men's lines to women's lines or girls to boys lines in films. It happens to be Disney, but it could be any. So, Frozen, which is the girls Disney film, is 52% boys lines. Mulan is 72% boys lines. So we become used to that. And when we grow up, we make this graphic, which is 2000 films. These are the women's lines and these are the men's lines. So that's also the meeting you just went to. It's the textbook you just read. It's everything is bound everything to this. And Gina Davis, the amazing actress, has gender and media. We started working together on measuring this stuff. And in fact, our colleague Shree, who's at USC, has been using machine learning. And we can look at scripts and we can listen, Siri, Alexa, how gender biased was this meeting today? How racist was this meeting today? We can ask and query and see. These are valid research areas to get more talent to the table. And so I would say confidence is one of the things that's really being chipped away. And the confidence challenge is in two parts. One is about you belonging and that your ideas are not as equal. And the other is the topics of interest to you are not as worthy of research. We should do self-driving cars, but we can't work on tech for justice. But I would share that we could work on tech for justice. And in fact, one of our heroes is this woman. She is, two of them, actually, I'll show you two of them. This is Ida B. Wells.
Oh, yes.
Right? And Ida was also a contemporary of Ellen, second industrial age. She was in Chicago. Some of her very good friends in Mississippi were dragged from their grocery store and executed by lynching. And she realized she could use the data set of what was happening with this lynching to write what became the Red Record. And I would share that this publication won the Pulitzer Prize in 2020. So she's the Black Lives Matter data scientist from the 1800s, knowing that this one is a good one, a topic. This is a place called the Hull House. Think WeWork Makerspace, industrial in Chicago. Jane Addams started with arts and other things, but they also did a lot of data work. This is not the smart city, it's the wise community. So they're looking at wages, they're looking at livelihoods, they're looking at who moved from where. This is her colleague who did all this data work. So What if instead of the team that somebody's probably working on a smart city team, and someone has decided that the most important thing in the smart city is transportation or, the back office of the city, but maybe the most important thing in the city is also the people who live there and how talented they are and how can we use Uber and Lyft to deliver the food that's available across our city tonight to everyone so everyone can eat. This woman, Jane Addams, won the Nobel Peace Prize for inventing social work. And yet, she did this work And by the 1920s, the University of Chicago faculty, Ivory Tower, exited her, say, her work is not, it's not academic, it's too much in the field.
Wow, that's
very sad. So this is really profound stuff to know, because you can use the knowledge of this to build your confidence, to push back in the meetings. You can do it in a friendly way, and then we can team up to do it if you need it. Because we invented this field, right? Ada Lovelace is Lord Byron's poet math daughter. Lord Byron was with Mary Shelley when she wrote, when she came up with Frankenstein. And, you know, in fact, I love the Ada's crazy hair. It looks like Princess Leia. She said, I wish to bequeath to the generations a calculus of the nervous system. I think we can figure out the math of the cerebrum, AI, if we think about it right, the way that we think about astronomy and slide reel or something else, like old words. First industrial age, she's our hero, but why do we know about Steve Jobs and these guys? So again, I'm coming up to this history on a regular part in our themes, because it's critical for us to see it. And for you guys in chips and semiconductors in this area, this is one of the core key places for all of humanity that you are building for. And so we need you to know about Hypatia and that she thinks music is part of math. We need you to know about these heroes so that you bring forward all of human capability, not just half of the people get to do it, or certain people of a certain race in a country get to do it if they're male and all of that.
Thank you. That was very inspiring. So I'm actually going to switch gears and look at one of the questions from our audience. So they want to talk about technology and policy. So they ask that the technology moves quickly while the policy moves slowly. So how do we address this gap so that the technology can be applied in a safe, effective, and equitable way?
Yeah, it's a really important point. And one of the things we were doing is this stuff is really hard. You know, privacy policies and all this stuff is really hard. How do you regulate? What do you do? So if think about this, our government colleagues, they would not make policy about medical topics unless they had a top doctor or researcher, you know, in the US National Institute of Health or Surgeon General, or these people would be in the room. But I think we've sort of gotten into this habit because we all have technology and use technology. Each person, even if they're not an expert, is the governments are doing this work without somebody with technology skills at the elite level in the room sometimes. So I divide the problem into maybe three areas. This is something we did as the US CTO team, and I'm going to repost this link in the chat. Because it shows three different areas. One is policy, and some examples in there. How do we have technical people in the policy room with other colleagues? Now, a lot of tech people can be quite arrogant with their tech. So we didn't want that. We don't want them missing. You know, we want them just in the room together, because talented, smart people, and that's really what President Obama was doing. He was saying he added the US CTO, we added the first US chief data scientist. It was pull up a chair. And so this idea of civic tech, philanthropic tech, we don't just have commercial tech. We don't have lawyers who are just commercial. We have all kinds of lawyers. We should have tech people. And of course, every government has tech people. But a lot of times they're kind of considered for after we decide what we do instead of during. So the architecture is off. The most famous example is the healthcare.gov website, which cost, you know, easily 10 to 100 times the cost and didn't work. But someone technical could have been there and made more lily pad designs instead of big waterfall projects. So the first part is technical policy. You know, someone in the room when we're talking privacy, open source, or if we're talking foster care and remembering that. The second one, let's call it delivery or capacity build this government. So whichever government, why should the commercial sector work so easily with these great apps and, you know, I can quickly get a car from Lyft, or I can get a package, or I can, you know, check this, but I can't figure out how to properly do my driver's license. So Estonia wins on having the most digital government, but others are getting there. And so civic tech, and so now there's roles. There's the US Digital Service, there's the CTO team, there's Presidential Innovation Fellows, which is like a 1-year fellowship. There's younger ones called Coding It Forward, who are interns from college. There's also the US Digital forget their name, they're in GSA, there's tech transformation. So there's these seats coming into government for all of us to rotate just like other colleagues. And I really encourage you, serve your country some way. You can come state, local, province, you know, your countrywide, UN, you know, tribal, different places. You can come by API. You can come by being on a committee. But the government is only whoever shows up. That's all it is. So you got to show up. And then the last area I'd say, so capacity build your government. And then we thought capacity build the American people directly. And so the version there would be something like the CS for All project, which was how to find people. This was, I'm going to post, this is now a project that's in general, but it was an initiative we started at the White House. Already in the country, there's somebody, I call it scout or surface, scout and scale. There's already plenty of people who are doing things that have already solved the thing, because there's over 7 billion people on the planet. So somebody somewhere is doing this. What are they doing? It might be working regionally, it might be just promising, but it's easier than a new idea. So you can also do the new idea, but go on almost like a literature search for who is already fixing problems.
Working on it. Yeah.
And then you kind of show up and accelerate them. So I'll share this this thing in the chat, which is try this at home. And these were examples of things we found all over the country, from, you know, programs for getting more young people into STEM, especially inclusively, to future of work, to solving police data, open police data and challenges there, like Ida B. Wells would be very happy. And in fact, I'd share that we found 10th grader Grace teaching the police chief how to code. So these are programs where you get to work on your hometown for your homework. Like, all around, people have fixed this stuff. And so if you take Gloria's thing, gather often, and then you tell each other what you're doing, or maybe a few degrees from you is somebody solving something, you can move faster. Because, you know, I was honored to be able to help Malala start the Malala Fund, because Malala is going to help us get girls and everybody in a school. Like, if she's doing that and I help her, it will happen faster. So faster. Think of it like being a venture catalyst. You can go help each other accelerate what you do.
Thank you. Thank you for that advice. Let me look at the other questions from the audience. So they ask if you have any suggestions regarding sustainable electronics.
Any suggestions versus for what? For
sustainable electronics, I guess.
I might turn to you guys, but I'll show you an example. So I grew up just north of here. I'm in Western New York, I'm in Chautauqua, but in the Mayville area, which is Western New York, sort of south. But if you go up to Buffalo and a little bit further, there's Niagara Falls. And, you know, we're very proud in Buffalo, because Tesla came here and using Niagara Falls was able to demo AC and light our city. So a city of light is Buffalo. And this is from one of the fairs at Buffalo, right? So amazing, right? But at the same time, if you went to Niagara Falls, look how awful, you know, like the choking, you know, this is second and third and current industrial, it's just dumping all the pollution, right? And this is a very famous painting up here by a guy named Frank Moore. And I'm going to zoom in, because if you look, you'll see chemical formulas. It's called Niagara in the water. I just found this crazy thing from when I was younger, this picture, because I'm up at my visiting my mom. And it was from the science fairs when we were younger. And I hope, actually, anybody listening, I wish you would post the kinds of things that you did as a child in science fair that got you into science and math, because I think this stuff is ultimately science and technology is about love. But this was a picture. Sorry, it's rotating. Let's see if I can get it.
Oh, yeah.
But my friend Mira right here, this is me. I was working on ocean water to hydrogen projects when I was little. This is Mira. Mira's project was literally mice in the basements at Love Canal, which is one of the Superfund sites that Hooker Chemical had capped it, and then they built a housing project on top of it up in, and it was a canal that was originally going to be, because of DC, you know, we would power the companies on it. So how do we, so I'm more talking about, like, this problem is so not new, but we always don't solve it. So I think a few things. One is there's a lot of material already in the dumps. And, you know, so figuring out how to
how to use them
within the money, you know, find and cheaply recycle and find ways to use the things we've already pulled out of the earth. I think it's very important. And I'd be really interested in hearing from people things that they have seen that work, because I think this is a problem where it's incredibly urgent. You know, wars are being fought around access to water, access to rare earths, and, you know, it's impacting every part of society. We want to have these incredibly powerful tools and devices, but how can we do it in a sustainable way? I think championing that is one of the most important things to be doing in the world, and coming up with looking for colleagues and solving these things. You know, how can we do this in a new way? So we don't have this industrial age again that is very colonial, very extractive, but instead we could have a new way of doing this. Like, why don't we have a industry and community and social and inclusive age that understands that that we are part of nature. We're not in charge of nature, and we are part of a community, and we are part of the systems. And it was really striking to me. One of the people in the movie, in the film, maybe you guys will remember who it was talking about how sometimes you might be hearing people are talking and they sound like they know, but you know too. And it reminded me of, we did a thing called Made with Code. And it was showing all these amazing things that women do with code. And Danielle, my friend who's at Pixar, she said when she was younger in computer science in school, she was sitting there and people would say these things. And she's like, how did he know that? I don't think I would have known that. And then just felt like, how did he know that? And then she realized they didn't know it. They just were like saying it. And so she learned like, oh, they're just like saying their idea, but they have been raised with so much. It's confidence. Almost like confidence privilege that they just say the thing because they're joyfully excited and they're like this. And so you can also be joyfully excited about your ideas, and you can also question things. So just really want you guys to know this. And when I got to government, I launched a search for a thing called the Declaration of Sentiments. And the reason why I got that is because I had most recently read this thing. So people have been fighting for equality for all time, right? And I'll share a different one. Pennsylvania Hall is a place that Gloria Steinem told me about, where this is a totally intersectional place. Then in, I think, 1838, people crowdsourced, like on GoFundMe, and built, I think 20,000 people gave all this money, and built an amazing hall, like the Acropolis, not that big, but big. And then they were meeting, and people, all different people of different races and genders, were all meeting. And for 3 days it worked until someone burned it down. So we know that it's a big fight. And so later, about 10 years later, some of those same people and others met for this meeting at Seneca Falls. And they wrote a document. It was 300 people met. It's in near the Finger Lakes. And I think the reason why there were a bunch of different reasons, but one of them also is, if you think about the industrial ages of those times, all of the goods are moving through the Erie Canal, going through that area. So not only are physical goods and commerce, but ideas. And also the Haudenosaunee, the Iroquois, the Native American women, had much more equality, so the women could see this. So this is one of the moments. Frederick Douglass was there, Elizabeth Cady Stanton and others. You know, we have a challenge of racial inequality throughout all this time. It was more of the Caucasian communities were getting to meet. 100 people signed this document that they ratified. And I want you guys to kind of glance through, if you get a chance, at the sentiments, because they say things like equal pay, and they say things like access to work. One of them is about access to the profession. He has taken all the professional appointments that he feels worthy to himself. And then it lists, like, you know, law and whatever. We would list venture capitalists, you know, we would list chips today, right? The last one spoke to me, and the last sentiment says he has sought to destroy her confidence and get her to lead a dependent and abject life, written in 1848. And so anyway, I think that I bring this up again, and I keep hitting history as it relates to sustainability, because if the people from the Onondaga community who were right there and others had been, you know, especially the women, if the women and men had worked together from the beginning, if we had more balance in what we do, I think we would think really differently. And I include nature in that balance. And I'm really thankful for that question. And I'm thankful for you guys paying attention to that, because we need all of us to work this way.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing those insights. There is another question from the audience. So they have a question about gender bias again in STEM. There's a lot of negativity when a woman gets an opportunity because people feel that because of a lot of initiatives, women are being preferred. How do you think these kind of attitudes can be countered?
You know, there's a couple of ways. First, making people aware of them. And sometimes you can't make everyone aware because they're not listening, but you might be able to find some allies. So I'm just going to post this one. These are two new films that are out. And so I think if we can require these films for anybody, but certainly any STEM universities should require these films to be watched. One of them is called Coded Bias, and it's about bias in algorithms and very specific stories. It's on Netflix. And then Picture Scientist. It covers three different women. I mean, even if you watch the trailer, you will learn the kinds of crazy stuff we are all putting up with. And so first off, knowing that this exists is a really significant thing for the guys. A lot of them haven't really realized this and would team up with us if they knew. And then I have some links here, I'm gonna post this. This is a grid that we were able to do that has specific actions that leaders can take, managers can take, you can work on pipeline ecosystems. And it's the action, what it looks like and how to measure it. One of the number one things we have to do is get leaders to prioritize these topics as equal. I actually, I was listening to a faculty meeting and I heard them talking about climate change and I heard them talking about DEI. And I was like, wow, they don't understand that both of these problems are hard. And both of these problems can be worked on as if they're hard and all of us could pile on, but everyone was piling on climate change. And on the other one, they were doing things, but I think they didn't share the common knowledge that it was a problem at the level it is. And I don't think they shared the common knowledge that we should be working on it and that it would solve the other problems. And I thought about it, like they were kind of measuring a lot of stuff. And I thought it's like if for climate, we just measured the temperature rise and reported on that. It's like measuring how many people we have in the team. And so I was happy to see, you know, we've been working on some DEI. I'm on the MIT board and the teams have been working on that, and we have a long way, like all the universities to go, a really long way. And so I shared an interesting thing that the plan itself, it now has four sections to it, and I'll post this. The idea of belonging and achievement in addition to composition, because one of the things we find when we work on DEI, let's say you walk in a meeting, you guys have had this happen. We walk in a meeting, we're gonna work on inclusion, and all of a sudden everyone in the room is talking about K-12. And you're like, and my friend Susan who runs YouTube, she's like, what about the people who work here right now? Could we work on that? And so this let's work on belonging. I was lucky to give the commencement address for MIT in 2015. And my main thing is that, you know, they have mens et manus, mind and hands, all of us technical, you know, it's like the teaching laboratory that you know, co-doing. And I said, like, their silent word is et core and heart. And I think that all of us in technical fields, that when we're in the best form, I have two boys and their third grade teacher used to say, in effort, there's joy. And that's true. And so, you know, and that's certainly learning math and science and these things is a lot of effort, right? But so is writing an essay. And so it's not like special people are scientists, it's that we have these biases. So I just was trying to share that technology in its greatest form is about love. It's about, you know, oh my God, how does the universe work? What's this frog doing? Like the kind of discovery and how wonderful that can be. And the teamwork there, and then service, ingenuity, engineering is a service oriented idea, making things.
That's true.
And then the third one is community. And I would share with you guys, I know you're saying that from the data in the beginning, what is it, about 5 or 7% of the people. Yeah, that's very lonely. It's not that the guys are not so great, but it's like, it's very lonely. And so when we were at Google I/O, which is a big conference for Google, like the Worldwide Developers Conference for Apple and these things, we were also, it was about 7% women. So we started to have a dinner the night before to have people have friends in the hallway. And then we started to do things like we held back some of the tickets because it sells out like a rock concert, like, you know, 15 minutes done. So we held back tickets and we started inviting women to come because we realized a lot of women didn't think they were supposed to go to this. And we also were expanding to get people to come from coding boot camps as well as universities and other paths, the career paths that were out there. And we were able to go from like 7% to 22% the next year, just by paying attention to welcome the people who should be there and then creating community around that and visibility to do that. I'll find this one piece we did. It was called 7 Tech Makers and a Microphone. And the reason for that was we wanted to have women on stage because a lot of times women are not on stage. So I'll post this here. You know, we're sort of, if you see, I always call it like minions. You know, like there's no girl minions. There's one Smurf. You know, like we're always like a little aside. Like even this one is an amazing one I'll share with you guys. This is an incredible picture on the front of the White House. You may not have ever seen this, but it's Wilbur and Orville Wright. And look at Catherine.
Oh, wow.
Right. So Catherine Wright is, and Wilbur, Orville, and Catherine won the Medal of Freedom from the French for their contributions to flight. So maybe it's not the Wright brothers. Maybe it was always the Wright, the family Wright. And the thing that no one knows that we found that I love is that their mom, Susan, was a mechanical genius. And so the reason why the children invented flight, I think, is because at their design kitchen table, they were learning design thinking. Their mom, if you ever saw the movie mother. Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, and they're like, the dad is making all this, that's their mom, Susan Wright.
Yes, thank you. I guess we are actually getting towards the end of the event. So just to wrap up, I want to ask before we end our great conversation, I learned a lot already about the history and your insights on this. I want to ask you for your closing remarks or one last piece of advice that you want to share with our workshop attendees.
Sure, I'm going to look for one other thing. I think for me, and I'm going to give you guys a little bit of this WikiGap thing. I think knowing that these topics, you know, are worthy, any topics are worthy, I'm going to post, you know, hack the pay gap deserves computer science. And so just realizing, this was a really interesting one that we came across, which is, it was the White House Council on strengthen efforts to increase opportunity and end poverty. And so, you know, there's some young people who just made a public health tool. One is that she's a chemist and the other is she's a urban scientist, and they made BioBot, and they're putting like a little chemistry lab in the sewer system at different points. They were doing it to help with the opioid crisis, to maybe target different areas of the city, not privacy like a house, but and now it's being used for COVID monitoring to help reduce impacts. So understanding and keeping your confidence that the world doesn't separate, the universe doesn't separate all the subjects. We do, so we don't have to separate them. You can use, you know, like Joy Buell Namwini, the poet of code. She is, you know, I mentioned the story a second ago about Seneca Falls. So Seneca Falls was a time, and I'm going to pull up this. Seneca Falls was this meeting, and they called for more meetings. Let's get together. Let's go. And 2 years later in Akron, Sojourner Truth shows up and says, ain't I a woman? As a woman of color, like, why are we not working together? This is ridiculous. And so Joy creates AI. And this is an homage to Sojourner Truth, but poetry with technology. And it's very powerful. Story of why face recognition should not be rolled out at all right now, because it's completely racist and sexist. and biased because of how it's been designed, and we can't use it at scale for policing or anything if it's not equal. This algorithm that Justice League just stopped the IRS from using face recognition to get your tax returns. So it's about these kids. And knowing us when we were little, President Obama's talking to them and he's saying, how did you make this? They made a page turning robot.
Oh.
And he says, cute. How'd you guys make this? And they said, we had a brainstorming. And he laughed. He said, okay, then what did you do? We built some prototypes. So like, can you imagine hanging out with your friends when you're 5 and 6, solving things for the world and exploring, wearing capes and having fun? This is engineering, right? And so I think the thing that I would leave you with is just that everyone, you know, everyone can be doing this amazing stuff, and we really need each other right now, and we have so much stuff to fix. And it, you know, it's time. And so I'll give you this cool framework that some people made, the DQ Institute, of all the ways that technology, you know, including like just like reflect for a minute. Why did Facebook just stop right away when the stuff happened with the Rohingya community? Like, what is wrong with people? So we are in those meetings, but we're usually under that. And so we have to either make our own stuff or get in there or work together to say, hey, let's not ship the next advertising feature and sort of work on the stuff that's bullying people or hurting people or ruin democracy. Let's work on that as our priority, or let's close the company. You know, so, you know, how do we get those kinds of values to all of this and power tools and assume that, you know, our company Shift 7 means, and if you look at your keyboard in most countries,
yes,
shift to 7 billion colleagues.
That's very nice. Thank you. That was very inspiring. I guess I want to thank everyone for joining us on a Sunday, and also thank you, Megan, for sharing your perspectives on improving diversity in STEM and sharing the history of these untold heroes. And I would like to end this conversation and enjoy the rest of the workshop and have a good rest of your day. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Rabia.
Thank you.